You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, June 7, 2017.
The whole point is to create this like thoughtful, you know, like reader culture, and then you have to pay the light bill. You're like, wow.
We look into the challenges of operating local bookstores coming up later in the show in today's WFHB Community Report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Richard Fish covers the Chipotle hack on a new edition of our Consumer Watchdog segment, Better Beware. But first, your daily headlines.
One of Indiana's pilot pre-K programs is likely coming to Monroe County. Governor Eric Holcomb announced today that Monroe would be one of 15 counties in Indiana that will become eligible for the publicly funded program starting next year. Earlier this year, Indiana lawmakers agreed to expand what is known as On My Way pre-K, which is currently offered in only five counties. The eligible counties were chosen by the U.S. Family and Social Services Administration, which studied the needs of 27 Indiana counties.
A new state law taking effect July 1st will provide criminal immunity to Good Samaritans who rescue pets trapped in hot cars. To be eligible for immunity, the person must have reason to believe the pet is in serious danger, and law enforcement must be notified beforehand. Also, only a reasonable amount of force may be used, and the animal must be accompanied until police arrive. While the law would prohibit certain criminal charges, rescuers are not immune from civil liability for vehicle damage. The law calls for Samaritans to pay half the damages unless the owner agrees to cover all costs. According to the director of Fort Wayne Animal Care and Control, last year there were 269 calls for dogs left in hot cars from May 1st through September 30th. The average interior temperature of these cars ranged between 90 to 130 degrees. Police response time typically fell between 5 and 20 minutes.
Suspects arrested on felony charges in Indiana will soon be required to submit to DNA collections as part of the arrest process. Senate Act 332, which was signed into law by Governor Eric Holcomb and is applicable to arrestees beginning next year, is a step beyond what is currently allowed in Indiana. Prior to the bill's passage, only convicted felons were required to submit DNA samples. Now, an individual needs only to be charged with a felony to be required to submit to the cheek swabbing. After the sample has been collected, the DNA will be run through Indiana's DNA database to test for matches. The bill received bipartisan support from representatives and senators across the state earlier this year. Representative Patrick Bauer of South Bend suggested that DNA swabbing is, quote, the 21st century version of fingerprinting, end quote. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled in favor of collecting DNA samples from felony arrests in 2013. The court said requiring the samples preserves constitutional rights and is a reasonable police booking procedure. Indiana joins 30 other states who already collect DNA samples from individuals charged with felonies.
The Bloomington Plan Commission is considering amendments to the City of Bloomington's 2040 Comprehensive Plan. According to Planning Director Terry Porter, the city has received numerous comments on the draft comprehensive program. Porter made the statement during a Plan Commission meeting on Monday.
We received a total of 172 proposed amendments. 142 of those have been sponsored and or proposed by Plan Commission members. And this is during the open period between May and 1st and May 31st. So it doesn't include the 51 that we have been through prior.
The public comment period for the draft comprehensive plan has ended. But Plan Commission members continue to craft amendments. The Commission spent more than 4 hours Monday reviewing 50 of the 172 amendments currently being proposed. One amendment addressed the City's goal to update its policies to address emerging forms of transportation, like electric vehicles and their charging stations. The amendment calls for solar panels on electric vehicle charging stations in an effort to minimize the use of coal-based electricity. Commission members Nicholas Kappas and Isabel Piedmont-Smith supported the amendment.
I think a lot of people have this mistaken idea that electric cars are really environmentally friendly when, really, when you plug them in to charge them, you're using coals, you know, if you're living in Bloomington. So I think this is a good reminder to people that, you know, unless it's paired with solar or some other renewable energy, it's really not that great.
Commission members speaking against the amendment said some charging stations might not be able to accommodate solar panels. Planning Services Manager Scott Robinson says the city is already working towards a greater use of solar energy.
If this was a city initiative, I don't see any reason why we wouldn't be looking at alternative fuels. You know, I think if you look at coal and at least as how we know coal is happening today. Coal-based electricity probably doesn't have a very long life, is at least what they're anticipating with natural gas and other forms of electricity. Again, staff doesn't feel this isn't necessary with this program.
The amendment failed on a tie vote of 4-4. The Plan Commission will continue to review and refine 46 more amendments in a special session on June 19th.
The Vigo County Sheriff's Department reports they're having difficulty managing what they say is a crowded inmate population in the county jail in Terre Haute. The department is pressuring county officials to move forward on a project to build a new county jail, which has as an estimated cost of $68 million. Vigo County settled a lawsuit in the year 2000 with the American Civil Liberties Union about the number of inmates that could be housed at the jail. According to the lawsuit, no more than 268 inmates can be housed at any time. Due to an excessive inmate population, the Sheriff's Department shuffles the inmates to other jails in neighboring counties. Vigo County Sheriff Greg Ewing says that costs Vigo County about $1 million a year.
Like many jails in Indiana, we are extremely overcrowded and having to farm our county prisoners to neighboring counties and so forth, but
Ewing says the ideal inmate population should be about 80% of total capacity, but he says the county jail currently houses exactly 268 inmates. That is 100% of the total capacity.
The issue right now is for the county commissioners to select a site to build the jail on, and they're working on that, and then, of course, once that is done, then it would be up to the county council for funding of the new facility.
Vigo County Councilman Brendan Kearns doubts the need for a larger jail. Kearns prefers the current jail site despite county commissioners saying in a statement that the area is not big enough to house all the inmates. To support his claim, Kearns pointed out that the inmate population has declined 10% in the last 5 years, and there is a possibility to increase the number of inmates by 30-40%. Ewing disputes those numbers. The source of funding for a new county jail has not been confirmed by the Vigo County Council. This week, the Vigo County Jail requested a judge approve an agreement to decide on a timeline for the selection of the new jail site, but the judge declined the agreement. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Local bookstore owners in southern Indiana say college towns are keeping a love of physical books alive. And outside that university bubble, other bookstore owners are trying to do the same. Dominic Jean brings us that story today in the WFHB Community Report. This story airs courtesy of a partnership between WFHB and a journalism class at the IU Media School taught by Professor Michael Conway.
Caveat Emptor has been a part of the Bloomington community for 45 years, and while the owners may have changed over time, their love of books has not. The new owners, Catherine and Eric Brown, say they're loving the community supporting them as they keep Caveat open.
It has been really, really rewarding to take over an institution like this and not only be able to keep it going, but also people seem to be really happy about it. Yeah. So we're in an unusual position where, you know, here we are just doing work and hopefully making a little bit of money, and people are coming in and thanking us.
In some college towns, a book culture is surviving and even thriving. But some data shows there's been a drop in the number of bookstores in the U.S. by at least 12%, according to previous census data. Eric says, at least for his own bookstore, they owe a part of their continued survival and success to the university and the research-rich environment of IU.
I mean, it's really built around the symbiotic relationship with Indiana University as far as getting quality books from professors and selling quality books to people who have thesis papers to write and are building their PhD and building their personal library to go on and be educators and on and on and on. That's really our bread and butter, so we rely on it so much.
But just 40 minutes south along Indiana State Road 37, Lacey Hawkins, the owner of Inklings Bookstore, is trying to keep a book culture in the small town of Bedford, Indiana, alive. Lacey and her husband Brian run Inklings Bookstore while also teaching full-time. Inklings is the only bookstore in Bedford, and Lacey says the lack of a university makes it difficult to build and keep a book culture.
We joke sometimes. In kind of a dark joke way, that the bookstore is our expensive hobby more than it's a business, you know, because it's sometimes us paying so that Bedford has a bookstore, you know, like it comes out of our pockets to keep the bookstore going. And that's not sad just on the financial level, there's an emotional level too, where you're like, the fact that like we're paying to make it go means that it's not meeting, like there's no people showing up to support it, you know. And they do, but there are the times when they don't is when you do kind of lose that little bit of hope, because if the whole point is to create this like thoughtful, you know, like reader culture, and then you have to pay the light bill, you're like, wow, like where is this culture? Where are the people who want to read and be changed by ideas?
College towns can create the type of culture that helps bookstores flourish. Lacey talked about Oxford, Mississippi, which has three bookstores all on the same square and all owned by the same business. Eric from Caveat says he has dreams of going beyond just Bloomington with his own business.
My ultimate dream, and this might be a pipe dream, is that we got in on the new ground floor of the next generation of bookstores.
One of the biggest dangers to bookstores, both those in college towns and those outside, was the popularity of e-readers, but that popularity seems to be fading. Statistics by a Pew Research study show 65% of Americans in 2016, when they read a book, read a physical one. Only 28% say they read an e-book instead. Eric also says one reason he thinks ebooks have been popular in the past is because they make it easy to see new books that are out, and that's what he and local bookstores are trying to do physically.
One thing we're not going to be scared to do is if a book's been on the shelf 2 years, it's going. I'm going to donate it to a good cause and move on and replace it with something else so our customers can always do that. So that's priority number one.
Lacey Hawkins says she notices young people at the high school where she teaches are rejecting e-readers almost hands down.
My observations, anyway, are that people who are into e-readers tend to be older generation, and I think that, I'm not sure why. I don't know if they thought, like, it's cool and trendy and we will do it and it will make us young again. But kids have just outright rejected it. And so I kind of appreciate the younger generation for being the rebels and saying we're not going to be pushed into it just because someone says it's cool.
Lindsay Simpson, the manager of the Half Price Books outlet in Bloomington, says he too thinks ebooks are just a fad that's already fading.
I think it's leveled off. I think when it first, you know, there are always a lot of early adopters to new technologies and things like that. I think when it first came out, the novelty of it had a lot of people buying them and using them. And over time, the people that were less serious about it stopped using them.
Local bookstores and outlets seem to be sticking around, at least until the next fad like e-readers comes through. But owners seem confident that no matter what fad occurs, that the business will continue and the culture will survive somehow.
Like so many other things, you know, do you want something with time and quality, or do you want something that's cheap and fast? And that, you know, the local bookstore is a part of that, is that kind of invested home-cooked meal.
Reporting for WFHB, this is Dominic Jean.
And that story was produced through a partnership between WFHB and a journalism class at the IU Media School taught by Professor Michael Conway.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly Consumer Watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
This week, I'm afraid, the scammers have been hitting close to home, right here in southern Indiana, among many other places, and they've been hitting a lot of people. I've got two questions for you. First, have you eaten at a Chipotle Mexican Grill lately? If you paid with a credit card, I'm sorry, but your card info has been stolen. Chipotle, and yes, that's how to pronounce it, I had to look it up, announced last week that many of their restaurants, definitely including the two locations in Bloomington, had their cash register systems hacked between March 24th and April 18th. The bad guys were able to capture the payment data for every customer, including the customer's name, the credit card number, the expiration date, and the internal verification codes. Chipotle says it's safe now, but if you're at risk, what are you gonna do? Well, either ditch that card and get a different one, or keep a close eye on your credit card bills for at least the next 20 years. Second question. Do you have, or know someone who has, an Android smartphone? The Android operating system from Google is used by 8 out of 10 smartphones these days, so you probably just said yes. Well, Google just found a huge malware infection on some very popular apps, and every Android user needs to check and see if they've got any of these and get rid of them. It's called Judy. Judy, Judy, Judy used to be a popular thing with people doing impressions of Cary Grant. But this Judy is malware that managed to get installed on at least 36 million phones before it was found. What it does is pretty damn sneaky, and you can't tell it's working. It makes your phone go out on the net and click on certain Google advertisements, which drains your battery and generates money for the people who place placed the ads who are the people who created Judy. And these people are a Korean company named Keeny Weeny. I'm not making this up. But they show up on the Google Play Store as Eni Studio Corporation. That's E-N-I Studio. They've been raking in $300,000 a month. Needless to say, Google has booted them and their 40-some apps from the Play Store. Now, before you download any app, check it out. Read the reviews. This isn't the first time nasty malware has gotten through Google's security checks, and the Android operating system has to be an open system. Open, as in vulnerable. So what do you do? Well, every smartphone needs a good antivirus program nowadays, and you need to keep that and your basic phone operating system up to date. Either set it to automatically check for and download updates, or check frequently, like every week, not just every few months, yourself. Beyond that, well, keep listening to Better Beware. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at wfhb.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@wfhb.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the Daily News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Lindsay Jones, Joe Crawford, Cole Stinson, Arjun Balasundaram, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, in partnership with Community Access Television Services. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our feature was produced by Dominic Jean.
Our engineer today is Dan Withard. Our theme music provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported independent daily news program. Recognized among the best newscasts in 2016, by the Indiana chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@wfhb.org. And stay tuned for the Brown County Hour, our award-winning monthly series coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.